The reviews are in, and we're going to tell you what they are. I'm Dr. Rob Steele, and he's Dr. Todd Vandenberg. Actually, we're just honorary doctors this week, but that'll make sense in just a minute when we get to the reviews. We're going to start with our whopping one big piece of news this week. Comes out of The Batman, where there's allegedly some casting that has been done. Some of it I like, some of it, Andy Serkis is allegedly going to be playing Alfred, and he likes it. We think it could be precious. Yes, I think it.
Yes, agreed.
I like that. I think it'll work.
I do like that.
The other piece of news out of this was Colin Farrell is supposedly playing the Penguin. And a lot of people are kind of going, Colin Farrell as the Penguin? I'm not sure I like that casting. I'm thinking, I don't want the Penguin in it in the first place because he's always irritated the crap out of me.
Personally, if they're going to put the Penguin in it, I love the fact that they're going with someone like Colin Farrell. So because they're going away from the caricature. And that is so important. I mean, if this is going to be a more realism-based Batman, we don't need the Danny DeVito was hilarious in the movie, was great and kind of terrifying, and it worked for that kind of film, but it's not going to work in a film like what we understand they're trying to do. So all aboard with Colin Farrell. I think he's a terrific actor, and I think this would be excellent. I mean, like Paul Dano doing the Riddler. I mean, this is all really, really good news. I mean, they're getting some, they're not A-listers because they're not huge box office stars, not even Colin Farrell at this point, or Pattinson, because he's been doing a bunch of indie movies, all to his credit, because he's been really good. But they're getting a lot of heavy hitters as far as people who can act.
Right.
I mean, this could be a really, really good movie. This is all really cool news to me.
I know they're going to put Colin Farrell in a fat suit, though.
If it's a reasonable fat suit, I'm okay. But I hope not. I hope not at all. That it's just some allusion to maybe he's an upper crust type. Who cares? But Colin Farrell can be an awesome villain.
They did do something in the books a couple years ago where they came up with a different Penguin that was not Oswald Cobblepot, who was a taller, skinnier Penguin and called himself Emperor Penguin. Maybe that's where they're going with this.
And in the game, now I've lost the name of the developer, but they do these episodic games. And
the Arkham games?
Not the Arkham games. They're they're very cinematic episodic stuff. And before the end of the show, I'll think of it, or I'll actually be normal and look it up. But Penguin is in these too. And totally different character. He's tall, thin, et cetera, et cetera. So it's just some reference to maybe he had a big nose or something like that. It made perfect sense in the context of the game. But,
well, you know, if you have a big nose like that, you can always get rhinoplasty, which is the technical name for a nose job, which is done by a doctor.
That's my segue. You're so clever.
Two wheels and one gyroscope. That's kind of wonky. I'm going to fall over. Yeah, you saw a movie this week that was a sequel to a movie from 1920 something, wasn't it?
Just about. Yes, I saw a movie which is a sequel to The Shining, one of the all-time great horror films, although Stephen King, who wrote the book, hates it. And Stephen King isn't always right. The sequel is Dr. Sleep, and there's been a lot of hype about this because, again, based on a Stephen King book, which I read the book and I thought it was okay. Had some of the classic problems of Stephen King, too much meandering. He needs an editor who can tell him, Steve, you're at page 500. You need to stop. Things like that. I like the book. It just wasn't The Shining, which is one of the great horror novels ever. The movie improves on the book a lot because there was too much extraneous stuff or crap or garbage in the book for my taste. Movie takes it all out. It still retains the basic premise. It's basically Danny Torrance, young Danny, who has The Shining in the original film and book. He's all grown up now, except The Shining hasn't left him. And he's been battling this for years because he's now
Obi-Wan's age?
Late 30s, yeah, something like that. Nice call on Obi-Wan because Ewan McGregor plays him. Ewan McGregor is fantastic in this. Like, he was actually good in the Star Wars prequels, which is saying something because practically no one was good in those movies. That's how good an actor he is.
Yeah, I thought Yoda did a good job, but he's not real. So I don't think that counts.
He isn't real. So Danny Torrance has been battling the issues of dealing with The Shining for decades. He's sunk into alcoholism because that does happen. And he finally finds a reason to get out of it. So you're watching his story move along. In the meantime, we're also watching the story of a group of odd people, let's say, who prey on people who have The Shining. They call themselves the Knot. So they will hunt down people who have The Shining, preferably children, because The Shining is more pure when they're young, and they will kill them to soak up The Shining to make them live longer. So you have these two threads going during the movie, back and forth. The transitions are done very, very well. And then, of course, the two stories meet, and things get really crazy from there. It opens up literally months after the events of The Shining. They didn't contact the original team and try to de-age them, especially not the kid who played Danny Torrance, because that would be kind of difficult. But they did a really good job of casting actors who bear some similarity to the original actors and actresses, which is good. So we get about 10 minutes of Wendy dealing with Danny. Danny hasn't spoken since the events at the Overlook Hotel. So, and he's still having visions of... if you've seen The Shining, the lady in room 237, that lady pops up.
Oh, good.
She pops up in this movie a lot, and it's still really horrifying. So Danny's fighting this, and then we fast forward, and now we have Ewan McGregor, and he's all grown up, and he's still battling the demons, and he gets some help from a friend, played by Cliff Curtis, who gets to just play a guy, which, look up Cliff Curtis. You've seen him in a million things, and he's really, really solid actor. And a lot of times he's playing a foreign national from here, from there, whatever. And this, he just gets to be a guy, which made me really, really happy. Danny finds a new friend who has The Shining, a young girl. And just for the same reasons that she reaches out to him, the Knot is trying to chase down her. So then there's a battle that's coming up between her and Danny and the Knot. The Knot is led by Rose the Hat, who's played by Rebecca Ferguson, who I really like a lot. To me, this is the best work she's ever done. She's awesome in this movie. Absolutely awesome. And there are tons of callbacks to The Shining. Like, mainly the music from The Shining runs through this entire movie. And it's done very, very well. And there are lots of callbacks to scenes from The Shining, actual shots that are repeated. And they're not taken from the old film. They've been redone. Maybe you can tell. And it's just, to me, it's just brilliantly done. It's scary. It's not terrifying as much as The Shining, because it's like, okay, we kind of know the setup so we can see what's going to happen. It's kind of a blend of a psychological thriller and a horror film to me. Totally works. They do return to the Overlook Hotel. That's not any kind of a spoiler, because if you've seen a trailer, you see Danny.
We're there.
Yeah, peeking through the hole in the door that Jack built. So lots of callbacks that all tie in, that make tons of sense. This really, really good movie. Mike Flanagan directed this and wrote the screenplay, so double duty for him. Also, he wrote and directed a few little films like Oculus, which was a pretty good horror film. He did Hush, which is a cool suspense film. Did Ouija, Origin of Evil, which is much better than the Ouija movie. Gerald's Game, a really good, tight suspense flick. And the Haunting of Hill House series. So this guy has a lot of really good work already on his resume. And, I mean, Dr. Sleep, he just knocked it out of the park. I mean, all the actors are really good. It's a really tightly written plot. does a really good job of blending those two storylines together. Very cool confrontations between Danny and Rose the Hat. Just overall a really, really good flick. Not like the most, not the scariest flick I've ever seen, but it's not, I don't really think that's what that was the goal. It's the goal is to tell the story, and it does a great job of that. Highly recommend Dr. Sleep.
Cool. So that was, it was one that I had looked at, and I wasn't really sure exactly how the plot would go because, frankly, I did not read the book.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, oh, he goes back to the house. Well, yeah, but who's going to be there? Now there's a plot to it. Hey, what a concept.
Right. And there's a very important reason that he goes back to the Overlook. And I'm not going to spoil that for you, but it completely makes sense because why on earth would he go there? So, oh, and Jack Halloran pops up again, too. Again, recast because can't get Scatman because Scatman's long gone. But
yeah,
they did a really good job of casting. And they're not imitating the mannerisms of the actors. They're doing the parts that they played, which is a really big, important difference. But they all did a fantastic job.
So no one actually does an impersonation of Jack.
And right.
That is good. Because I can't do one anymore. I used to a long time ago.
He looks like he favors Nicholson. I mean, no one would look at the guy and say, oh, that's Jack Nicholson. But you look at him, it's like, yeah, he looks kind of like him. Just like the actress who does the Wendy Torrance character. But again, they nail the performances really well. Jack, Wendy is in it more than Jack. I mean, just because that's how the story is structured. But yeah, Jack is in it. And Grady is in it. You know, the twins are in it. So, and again, the horrible woman from 237. So lots of goodness and not so goodness in a good way in Dr. Sleep.
See, I did another doctor thing that has lots of goodness and some not so goodness, but that's more of a budgetary and time thing in multiple ways. We haven't actually done a TV series in a while on this show, so I thought I'd go ahead and do Doctor Who. Not the new one that started in 2005 that everyone is currently familiar with. I'm going back to ye oldie Doctor Who.
Oh, cool.
With the E on the end of it. Oldie Doctor Who. The one that started in 1963 and went through, 89, I believe it was. Very long-running TV show with multiple actors playing the main character of the Doctor, but they didn't change actors in a soap opera kind of way,
right?
Which was popular at the time where, you know, if you would watch a soap opera, the part of Dave is now being played by Steve. Yes. And you kind of go, this is going to take some getting used to. And then Steve comes back and plays a different character and you go, what? No, I'm confused. They didn't do that. The way they did this, the character of the Doctor, if you don't know, you've been living in a cave. No, if you don't know, is a Time Lord from Gallifrey. That's right. A different planet altogether. And when their character or when their body gives out, whether they're shot or electrocuted or thrown off a radar dish. Yes, that happens at one point. Their body regenerates. They get a whole new body, a whole new personality, but they retain the memories of everything eventually, which is a brilliant way to change actors. And I realize that not every TV show can do that, but for this one, it really worked. The character of the Doctor travels through time and space in something called a TARDIS, which is actually an acronym for time and relative dimensions in space. Do you get to remember that through the show? No, you don't have to. It's just a trivia thing. It's called the TARDIS. It's a big blue police box. And if you don't know what that is, it's something they used to have in England where if you saw someone doing something illegal, you would grab them and throw them in the police box and lock them in. And there's a phone on the outside and call the police. That's what they're for. Kind of weirded me out a bit when I looked that up and went, wait, really? That's what? Okay.
Yes, he travels in time. The TARDIS looks like a police box because it has something called a chameleon circuit, which means it's supposed to blend in with wherever it goes. It got stuck in London in 1963 when it broke. And so it's stuck as a police box and no one cares. That's what it looks like. And you get used to it. And I know if you've never watched the show, you're thinking, Rob, how do multiple people fit in something that doesn't sound very big? It's infinitely bigger on the inside.
It is.
Literally. Although I did work this out once. Because there is, at the beginning of the series, literally an infinite number of rooms in the TARDIS. However, that's changed. Over the years, they had to eject four of them because they had been taken over by the Daleks, who were the big bad guys at the time. One of the swimming pools had to be ejected because the algae in it had become sentient. And then they lost one third of the rooms because of an extragalactic thing. So there's a math formula. You get infinity minus five times two thirds. And that's how many rooms are in the TARDIS, which is still more than you're ever going to need. It's a spectacular show, even back then. And the reason I say it's kind of got some iffy parts to it is because it was a BBC show, because there was a limited budget, you're going to look at it and think, boy, do these special effects look dated. No, they looked dated then.
Yeah.
But you know what? That's not why the show was good. It's not even the acting even, although sometimes you would get some good acting in it. The acting at times was, I think, very soap opera-ish, you know, not hideous, but at the same time you kind of go, you're reacting like that really to all right, whatever. It's the stories that kept the show going. The stories and the writing for this show was enough to sustain it for 27 years or whatever,
right?
And to bring it back for what, there was a movie in 96 and then the new TV series. That's what's keeping it going, is the writing and the stories, which is excellent. And to give you an idea of some of the writing, and a lot of people don't know this, because a lot of people don't know the other story that this guy's famous for. Douglas Adams of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which was a spectacular book. So there's a book review for you in our movie show. Go read The Hitchhiker's Guide. It was spectacular. Douglas Adams wrote a lot of Doctor Who episodes in the 70s, which when you see them, you go, yeah, okay, I can see this being a Douglas Adams thing, because he will he'll have a great story and every so often throw some humor in that makes you go, wait, what? Oh, okay, that is funny. It's great. It's a great show to watch. And I think the main reason that I'm bringing it up this week is because I was reminded of an app called Pluto TV, which, if you don't have it, you can get it for your phone. You can get it for home computers or whatever, where you stream TV shows, you know, to whatever you're watching it on. And it's got what I think is 150 channels?
Probably. Yeah, they seem to add new channels every
year. There's a lot.
About every week, yeah.
Anyway, one of the new channels they added not that long ago was a classic Doctor Who channel.
Nice.
Which will show, rather than doing what I did before Pluto existed and buying all the DVDs, I should have bought the car. I'm just saying. Anyway. You can watch all of these episodes, not necessarily in order, which is the one drawback to watching it on Pluto, but you can watch them for free on Pluto TV, which I think is great and a great place to start, really, because you can almost start anywhere in the series, because it's, even though the way they did it, the shows were done in half-hour increments, and each full episode was two to six parts. So an hour to 3 hours per episode. But you can kind of come in anywhere and pick up on what's going on. you know, if you, I missed last week's 3-hour episode and you come into the next one, it's not going to matter. You'll be able to pick it up. You'll be fine. But Rob, I'm coming in when the fourth Doctor is up. And what about Doctors 1, 2, and 3? You know what? It doesn't matter. You'll be fine. I came in on at the end of Doc. I remember my first episode was the one where John Pertwee, who played Doctor Number 3, regenerated into Tom Baker, Doctor Number 4.
Oh, perfect time.
And just that alone made me go, what the hell is this show? I'm interested enough to want to watch more. So I did, and have since caught up on everything. It's a great show. I highly recommend, yes, the original Doctor Who.
I will throw in that I totally agree with you. The original run of Doctor Who is the new run of Doctor Who is excellent, and the original run is excellent. That concept of regeneration was absolutely brilliant.
Inspired.
And again, as we said many times, it's all about the writing. Anytime we talk about a show that is like, you know, we watch movies so you don't have to, and here's an example, it's because of the writing. It's almost always because of the writing.
Yep.
And Doctor Who has excellent writing in spades. The effects weren't great. I think they had a special effects budget of whatever change they dug out of someone's pocket that week. And it doesn't matter.
I got an extra pence in the car. We can afford the nose for the character this week now.
Yeah, it doesn't matter because the writing is so good, you get lost in the show.
Right.
Excellent show. Excellent. Absolutely excellent.
My mom liked this show, which is, see,
that's impressive.
That's odd thing to get a mom to like the show.
That's impressive.
As opposed to my friend Brooklyn, who had no mom, she was motherless. That's my segue.
And I was going to say, speaking of writing, I watched another movie which had excellent writing, and it is indeed, thank you, Rob, Motherless Brooklyn. Odd title. Basically, it refers to the nickname of a character who grew up in an orphanage. Boom, there you go. That's what Motherless Brooklyn means. So solve that mystery. There's a lot more to solve in this movie because it is a mystery. It's set in late 50s New York. It follows a character named Lionel, who is an assistant, an associate at a small-time private detective agency. And he's assigned to follow his boss. His boss is having a meeting with some mysterious people, and the boss winds up getting shot. So now Lionel has to solve the mystery to figure out who killed him, why they killed him, et cetera, et cetera. This movie is absolutely great. Edward Norton plays Lionel. One little thing to throw in there is Lionel has Tourette's. If you're not aware of Tourette's is the, I'll just say disease, thing where you are forced to just randomly say things that they pop into your head and you can't control yourself. A lot of times it's profanity. It doesn't have to be. So he has Tourette's. So he has this weird thing. His friends call him Freak Show because of this, because this is the 50s and people weren't exactly all that up on it. Edward Norton stars in it. He also wrote the screenplay. He also directed this movie. I won't be too surprised if he's not nominated for an Oscar for best actor. He's great in this. It's just that's always such a competitive field. But if he's not nominated for best director and best adapted screenplay, because it is based on a novel, I will be really, really shocked, because this movie is terrific. In a lot of ways, this plays like Chinatown. It's not as good as Chinatown because that's like the prime example of this kind of flick, where it's kind of a character study and a mystery at the same time, but it's pretty close. It's just a fascinating story of following this character and what he goes through to try to find out what happened to his boss. It's like Chinatown in that there's a lot of corruption going on in the big city. In Chinatown, it was Los Angeles. In this case, it's New York. Again, they're both.
They have a Chinatown.
Yeah, they do, but there's no Chinatown in this one. They're not looking at that. This is all about tearing down slums to make room for new developments so people can make money. The cast is terrific. The boss is played by none other than, and I just lost his name because what's wrong? Bruce Willis. So he's got a small role, but he just acts. He's not doing a Bruce Willis shtick. And Bruce Willis is a very good actor when they have him just play the character, and he's great. Alec Baldwin is one of the main antagonists. He is terrific. Willem Dafoe is a side character. He is terrific.
Sounds like we got a big cast movie again.
The cast is excellent. There's just a few main characters, actually. But everyone is just over the top wonderful. Gugu Mbatha-Raw, she plays she's not a woman of mystery, but she is. The plot basically kind of revolves around her because apparently she knows something that caused this whole situation, that caused his boss's death. Frank Minnis, his boss, Bruce Willis. So he's tailing her and tries to befriends her to try to get some more information, but she doesn't really know what's going on, but somehow she has the key. It's one of those kinds of movies.
Wow. Yeah,
other than just saying it's a murder mystery and it's a character study, and it studies a couple of characters. It's not just about Lionel. It's also about Alec Baldwin's character and, to some extent, Willem Dafoe's. So you just have to watch this film. It is kind of long. It's about 2.5 hours long. It doesn't feel like it, though. Everything just unfolds. And there are some shots which are they're just beautiful shots. There's a shot of just a puddle, and a woman approaches the puddle, and really all you see is her in the puddle, and you see her walking along, and then she steps through it, and then the camera has to pan up because there's Lionel following her. And it's just, there's so many shots like that, that everything, there's so much attention to detail in this. It's like they went back to the 50s to shoot this. I mean, there are cars, they got tons of period cars. It had to cost them a fortune to rent these freaking cars. Or maybe some of them are digital, because who knows. But some of the cars are dirty because it's New York. And you're going to get crap coming up from the streets. And it's that level of detail, which was just so impressive to me. Again, you were talking about writing before with Doctor Who, and this thing is just brilliant.
That sounds like the kind of a detail that you don't think about, like a dirty car. I'm thinking back through movies, most of the times you see a car, oh, it's freshly washed just off the lot.
Yeah.
Clean. And so, you know, seeing a dirty car, it's not something you think of. But when you see it, you kind of go, oh, there's a...
And there's so many little twists. There are a couple of big twists, but there are little twists that the movie is just constructed just brilliantly. And again, Norton, everyone is terrific. Norton's excellent. Baldwin is excellent. Some Trump fans may not like it because, I could say the character is kind of loosely based on Trump. Very loosely, I would say. Some Trump fans, honestly, probably won't notice it. But it's not a political diatribe by any means. It is partly a plea for justice, because that's what Lionel gets caught up in too. So again, Motherless Brooklyn, kind of a weird title. It'll be explained in the movie. Excellent, excellent film. I would say that Mr. Scorsese would say this was cinema as opposed to a, amusement park ride.
Yeah. Actually, it's kind of odd. My segue for this was very sloppy because I had no idea what it was about. I hadn't even seen a trailer for this movie.
Yeah, this movie.
Although you've seen a lot of trailers this week.
I have seen a lot of trailers. That movie will probably be lucky to make back its budget, and I'm sure they didn't spend a ton of money, but it's one of these small films, but man, is it ever good. And trailers, indeed. I have seen a lot of trailers this week.
I even got one that is kind of weird.
Oh, I like weird trailers.
Saw the trailer for Elizabeth Moss's The Invisible Man.
It's not Elizabeth
Moss's movie. She's just in it. She stars
as
a woman named Cecilia Cass, who is in a really horrible relationship with her scientist boyfriend. She finally leaves him. And as a settlement of them breaking up, He gives her $5 million provided she can stay sane. And she says, well, you know, to his lawyer who's giving her this deal, well, why can't he be here to say something like this to my face? Oh, he slit his wrists and he's dead now. Oh, well, guess what? He isn't. He's found a way to turn himself invisible, and he taunts her throughout the rest of the trailer, and I'm going to assume the movie, to make her look like she's insane, where I'm sure he'll get his money back or what. It's a bizarre refund attempt movie. That's what it is. although it looked like a really freaky horror movie, which is exactly what it's supposed to be, I think. So good for them.
It does. This was supposed to be part of the Dark Universe when Universal was going to have this wonderful recreation of all their great movie monsters from the 30s and 40s. And then they screwed the pooch by ruining it with the first movie out of the gate, The Mummy, because they wanted to make it into a vehicle for Tom Cruise because someone is stupid.
Yeah.
So now these are all standalone movies. And Blumhouse took this one, which they've done tons of excellent horror movies. I'm not really sure. The trailer didn't really sell me on this movie. To me, there was too much exposition going on in the trailer and not enough, is this going to be scary? The scary parts in the trailer, yeah, it looks like it will be, but I'm not sure how long it's going to take to get to that point.
Right.
From the trailer. I'm going to see it, definitely. Elizabeth Moss is great. The premise is interesting, but it is kind of weird that this guy now has this amazing power and he's just going to use it to terrorize his whatever,
ex.
I mean, that's just, yeah, I get it. He's a psychopath, but really? That's what we're going with? That just seems kind of weak.
No, I just work here.
Yeah. I mean, in the original thing, the goal was world domination. And now it's to, I'm going to ruin my ex. It's like, okay, that's kind of a come down.
It's a bit of a step down.
Yeah, a bit. But we'll see. I mean, what's in the trailer does look good. I just hope that there's more to it than right. that. Because I've seen a million evil ex revenge movies, and most of them suck. And I don't care if the ex is invisible this time. So anyway, you know, hopefully it'll be good. I have indeed seen some more trailers for a very big switch. This is also a relationship film, but a very different kind of relationship. It's called The Good Liar. And as you said, in pre-pro, kind of like maybe Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, except with a twist, because they're trying to con each other. And they're a bit on the older side, because it stars Ian McKellen and Helen Mirren.
Love them both.
This looks like it's going to be excellent. I mean, if the script is remotely good, they're going to do really good things with it. So McKellen is apparently some lifelong grifter, and Mirren is the rich widow, except maybe she's not. So it's a bit of a cat and mouse game between them, and maybe they'll team up and pull a scam on somebody else too. Can't really tell from the trailer, and I don't really care, because what a great team up. This just looks like it's going to be so, so good. So really looking forward to The Good Liar, which actually will be out this weekend. So November 15th is when it hits. So that will be coming very, very quickly. Also saw a trailer for, and I'm just going to mention one more, Bombshell. Bombshell won't be out until like the week before Christmas. So Merry Christmas. Get to watch a movie about how Roger Ailes was a terrible sexual predator at Fox News. So, yeah.
It's such a Christmassy tale.
It is a Christmassy tale indeed. So,
well, Bombshell is involved, but I don't think it has anything to do with Christmas.
Ooh, hey. So this is the story of three blondes at Fox, because they all seem to be blonde, right? You'll recognize a couple of the names, whether you watch Fox News or not: Gretchen Carlson, Megyn Kelly, and Kayla Pospisil, whose name I don't recognize, but apparently she's the third part of this trio, at least a trio that Roger Ailes, the head of Fox News, was being bad to in a sexual manner. So they got fed up and made it public, and Roger Ailes was, well, watch the movie and see what happens. This thing has an excellent pedigree. before I talk about who is in it, because that's why people are going to watch it, Jay Roach is the, director, directed Trumbo, a really, really good film. And Charles Randolph wrote it. Charles Randolph wrote The Big Short, another excellent film. So these guys have a really solid background. The reason you're going to go see it, though, even more than for the story, is because it stars a few people that you know really well, like Charlize Theron, Nicole Kidman, Margot Robbie. That's why everyone's going to watch this movie. So actually, interesting names that I don't even recall seeing in the trailer. Kate McKinnon, Allison Janney are in it. Like, wow. Very interesting. So if you're at all interested in politics, in justice, and there's probably a bit of comedy to this thing too. So Bombshell will be coming out right before Christmas. Watch Three Blondes get really angry and strike back at Roger Ailes.
Why am I ever so slightly worried that they could really turn this into a 9-to-5 sequel?
That would be so cool. I don't think they're going to do that, though.
9-to-5 based on a true story. Oh, shoot. I really hope not. That just now hit me, so I have no segue for anything on that.
Oh, sorry, and I left out that John Lithgow plays Roger Ailes. And John Lithgow, but man, he looks terrible because he's playing Roger Ailes. And Malcolm McDowell is in this. Again, didn't notice him in the trailer. He plays Rupert Murdoch, so it's like, holy crap, they have some serious freaking talent in this movie. Just amazing. Oh, and P.J. Byrne plays Neil Cavuto, so there you go. It's interesting because basically anybody who is anyone in Fox News is going to be portrayed in this movie. Oh, here's someone playing Rudy Giuliani. It's like, oh my God. Anyway.
Alec Baldwin shows up playing Donald Trump. No.
That'd be so fun. Anyway. Bombshell before Christmas. Looking forward to that.
Yeah. So see, we've given you a lot of excuses to, do what we tell you to do at the end of every show, and that is get out and go see a movie.
Captain, we're losing power on the warp engines.
I think we should be leaving now.
I'm going to go home and sleep with my wife.
And on that unusually harmonious bombshell, it is time to end.
I am very disappointed!
Man, we have a weird job.
It's shameful, but it's a living.
And like that, he's gone.
Hey, who turned out the lights?